a multi-billion dollar media company. Be part owner in Punch TV Studios for only $1 per share. Don't wait. This IPO stock offering is counting down to a close. Call now, 310-419-5914, or visit our website, punchtvstudios.com.
Buy your Punch TV Studios stock.
We think it's a great investment. Buy your Punch TV stock today.
President Trump's son-in-law, Jared Kushner, is expected to make a public statement at the White House after today's closed-door meeting with the Senate Intelligence Committee. Kushner has been talking voluntarily about the Russia investigation. In an earlier written statement, Kushner said he did not discuss anything improper with Russian officials or their intermediaries during the presidential campaign and transition. He insisted there was no collusion. With lawmakers in Washington set to vote on new sanctions against Russia, the Kremlin says the U.S. action could have wide-ranging effects. Bill Zimfer has more.
Russia's TASS news agency says the Kremlin is waiting for the final version of the sanctions bill, but a spokesman for Vladimir Putin has made it clear they are not happy. Dmitry Peskov said today the continuing U.S. sanctions rhetoric not only harms the interests of Russia and the U.S., but also potentially damages other countries as well. Peskov said overall the Kremlin is extremely negative on the topic of sanctions.
This is USA Radio News.
Right now at the Home Depot, Ortho Bug Be Gone 32-ounce concentrate, ready to spray, or 10-pound bag is your choice, two for just 10 bucks. There's no magic to making bugs disappear, but there is Bug Be Gone. It'll knock out over 100 types of insects for fewer pests in your lawn and more money in your pocket. Start your own disappearing act with Ortho Bug Be Gone. Your choice, two for just 10 bucks, only at the Home Depot. More saving, more doing. Valid through August 2nd while supplies last, U.S. only.
U.S. home sales are on the decline while prices are rising to a record level. The National Association of Realtors revealed today existing home sales dropped 1.8% in June, more than 1% economists had predicted. The lack of housing inventory is pushing gains in housing prices beyond any increases realized in wages. The median house price climbed 6.5% in June from a year ago to an all-time high of nearly $264,000. The Pentagon's being dressed down over some uniforms it paid $28 million on to outfit Afghan soldiers that Chris Barnes reports aren't being called useless.
Leading an inquiry into the situation is Senator Claire McCaskill, who's written a letter to the Pentagon detailing her concern that a special inspector for Afghanistan reconstruction has determined that the forest camouflage uniforms may be deemed useless because woodlands only account for 2% of the Afghan terrain. The uniform issue now enraging politicians on both sides of the political spectrum. They're calling it a waste of taxpayer dollars.
And as fast as he is, Olympic superstar Michael Phelps is not as fast as a shark. Phelps came in second last night as part of the Discovery Channel's Shark Week programming. Phelps swam 100 meters off the coast of South Africa in 38.1 seconds. The shark recorded a time of 36.1. Its speed was calculated by staffers who then used CGI. For USA Radio News, I'm Jules McKinney.
Did you know that 1 in 5 people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers, and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with a mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call NAMI Hunterdon at 908-284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. NAMI Hunterdon, the voice for mental health in Hunterdon County.
Good afternoon. The weather today is a chance of showers with thunderstorms also possible after 3 p.m. Other than that, it'll be partly sunny with a high near 81, north winds around 8 miles per hour. The chance of precipitation is 40%. New rainfall amounts of less than a tenth of an inch, except higher amounts possible when there's thunderstorms. Tonight, a chance of showers and thunderstorms. Be mostly cloudy with a low around 65, north winds 3 to 8 miles per hour. Tuesday, guess what? Slight chance of showers before 8 a.m., then a slight chance of showers after 9 a.m. So you get an hour between 8 and 9 where you don't have showers, I guess. And it's going to be partly sunny with a high near 79, north winds 3 to 6 miles an hour, and the chance of precipitation is 20%. Tuesday night, it'll be partly cloudy with a low around 63 with light northeast winds. Wednesday, mostly sunny with a high near 81, northeast winds around 5 miles an hour becoming southeast in the afternoon, and Wednesday night, it'll be partly cloudy with a low around 63. Thursday is a chance of showers with thunderstorms, also possible after 2 p.m., mostly cloudy with a high near 82. Thursday night, chance of showers and thunderstorms, and it'll be mostly cloudy with a low around 68. The chance of precipitation will be 50%.
Lose 20 to 40 pounds in 40 days, guaranteed. Let me repeat, lose 20 to 40 pounds in 40 days, guaranteed. This is not a crazy diet or exercise program. No drugs, hormones, or shots. You can lose 20 to 45 pounds in 40 days with Nutrimost Resonant Frequency Technology to measure 2,800 of your body's key biomarkers. Using NRF, they can find and correct the cause of your weight problem by measuring factors affecting weight gain, including metabolism, fat burning, fat storage, appetite, detoxification, and hormonal regulation. It's safe, fast, easy, and effective, and you won't walk around hungry or have cravings. It's even doctor supervised. Schedule a body composition analysis and consultation. You can be transformed in 40 days guaranteed. This is a limited time offer, so they can't wait to see you look great.
So call 888-718-7077. That's 888-718-7077. Or visit njthin.com. That's njthin.com.
Good afternoon and welcome to Mental Health Matters. I'm your host, Larry Cartwright, and this is NAMI's hour. NAMI is the National Alliance on Mental Illness, and it's compliments of the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce. In NAMI, there is a NAMI chapter in every county in the state of New Jersey, every state in the union, and overseas. In Hunterdon County, we're all volunteers. We work out of our houses, use our own phones, that sort of thing. We have no hired staff, no paid staff. And what we try to do is we try to help families or people who have someone in their family or someone that they know or work with or live next door or something like that who have a mental illness. And we do it in various ways. We have a support group once a month that is in Flemington, and it's from 7 to 9, and you don't have to register. You can just show up. It's at 52 East Main Street in Flemington. We also run a 12-week course called Family to Family, which will start in September, I believe the 14th, and it is a 12-week consistent course, and it goes over various things like medication, side effects, what to do, what not to do in certain situations, what to say, what not to say. It tries to get the person taking the course to feel what it's like to be the person with the mental illness. And if you have any questions or would like some further information, all you got to do is dial 908-284-0500. That's 908-284-0500. We don't man the phone 24/7, but we do have someone who checks it at least twice a day, and we guarantee we will get back to you. Today, we are very privileged to have with us Joe Young, who's the Executive Director of Disability Rights New Jersey. Joe, welcome, and we appreciate you taking the time to come on the show.
No, thank you. Happy to be here.
Like we talked before, I never heard of disability rights, and I thought I heard of just about all the programs that there were in New Jersey. But would you explain what disability rights is, how it got started, and who started it and when, that sort of thing?
Yeah, certainly. So it's a slightly longer story than you'd want to hear.
But go ahead.
So if you remember, those of us who are old enough remember when Geraldo Rivera went and did the expose of the Willowbrook School in Staten Island.
Right.
Right. So he went in with his camera and showed the horrible conditions that were in that institution that mainly served people with intellectual disabilities. As a result of that particular expose, Some people in Congress, particularly Senator Weicker from Connecticut at the time and Senator Harkin from Iowa, were concerned that the states were not treating people with disabilities well. So they started the Protection Advocacy System. So it's a federally funded program that was begun in the mid-1970s that were established to assist to oversee how the states were treating people with disabilities. So it initially started as protection and advocacy for individuals with developmental disabilities. So where it's a nationwide system of protection, it's called the Protection and Advocacy System. So it's a nationwide system of protection and advocacy programs, one in every state in the Union, the territories, and another one in the Native American territory out in the Southwest. So that's 57 protection and advocacy programs nationwide. A lot of us have the name Disability Rights and the name of the state. So there is a Disability Rights New York, a Disability Rights California. Pennsylvania used to be called Disability Rights Network of Pennsylvania. I'm not sure exactly what their name is. But generally, if you see something at Disability Rights in the name of the state, that's part of our network.
Okay.
And we've moved from the protection and advocacy for individuals with developmental disabilities to 8 different protection and advocacy programs now.
Okay. I know that your mission statement says it's advocating and advancing the human, civil, and legal rights of persons with disabilities, correct?
Yes.
Okay. So what type of disabilities do you serve? Is it just mental or physical or a combination of both?
No, it's every disability. So interesting. So as I said, we started off with protection advocacy for developmental disabilities. Protection advocacy for individuals with mental illness was added shortly thereafter. And then about 10, 15 years later, they started protection and advocacy for individual rights, which takes care of all the other disabilities. Interesting enough, protection and advocacy for individual rights, which would be the largest number of people, has the smallest funding.
Really?
Yes, that's the way government works.
Yeah, well, that doesn't surprise me. Now, if someone, well, how do you get your clients? Are they recommended by a doctor, or are you...
Again, so we tried to do the outreach like we did here. You met one of our staff people at a NAMI statewide event.
Right.
So we do try to do outreach, go out into the community. But, for example, in the institutions, in the psychiatric hospitals, state psychiatric hospitals, state developmental centers, we have signs up in the ward. And if you have a problem, if you're concerned about abuse and neglect, you can call us there. We have, obviously, people that we've helped before that... recommend other people, so there's a word of mouth thing going on, and then of course our internet site. So hopefully, if you do search for things like legal assistance and illness and disability, our website will show up.
Okay. Now, so somebody goes and sees your website or folders or whatever, and calls you or calls your office. What happens then?
Yeah, so we do have an intake office. So you don't have to just call us. You can, you know, start our intake process. So we do like people to go through the intake process.
Mm-hmm.
So because a good percentage of calls we can refer. So we can't do everything.
You try, right?
But we can't do everything. So if somebody has a problem that involves a disability or even Social Security or school systems or whatever else it may be, if it's not something that we would actually do ourselves, well, then we want to make sure that we give them information about where else to go. If it is something that we would do ourselves, then our intake office will try to get as much information as they can, and then we'll forward it on to staff to pursue. But as I said, you don't have to rely on the phone because, as you know, phones are always a little bit problematic.
Mm-hmm.
You can't get the right person. People are busy. So you can. We have an online intake format on the website, or you can send us an email, and anything like that we'll respond to.
Now, I'm very familiar with mental health issues, but as we were talking prior, but now physical disabilities, are we talking about like autism or disabilities of, lack of being able to walk or talk or whatever?
Yeah, so physical disabilities would be non-mental illness and non-developmental disabilities. So autism is generally considered a developmental disability.
Right.
The neurological disability, so blindness, deafness, ambulatory problems, loss of limbs. There are other things. Some other things would be things like processing difficulties, communications difficulty, processing here. It's not necessarily deaf or blind, but processing sensory.
Right, right.
So learning disabilities, for example, is a category of something like that, yes.
Okay. All right, so someone with a disability of some sort, not mental now,
right,
comes to you, it fills out the thing, what happens then?
Right, as I said, it goes to intake. Intake will review it. If it meets our criteria, goes through our priorities, then we will assign it to either an attorney or a non-attorney advocate to make the contact and get more information and decide the strategy to proceed from there.
Okay. Is it mainly that their rights are not being fulfilled, or is it just that they have a disability and they need help?
Well, so it's like so what we always say is what we try to tell people: look, if something's happening and it doesn't seem right, then you should ask questions, right?
Because
sometimes goofy things are permissible and sometimes they're not permissible. So if you have a problem and you think it doesn't sound right, or your neighbor has a problem, or a relative, right, or something like that, then give us a call. Ask, does this make any kind of sense? So it may be, a lot of landlords have no pet policies. But if you have a disability and you have a
service animal,
then we have a conversation. And the landlord says, well, I don't care if you have a service animal. We have a no pet policy. That sounds like something that you need to talk to somebody about, so give us a call.
Ironically, with you mentioning that, it was just in the paper, in the Huntington Democrat, the local county paper. I don't know if you happen to see it or not.
I did.
About the lady in the
right.
the pit bull mix.
Yeah.
It wasn't a thoroughbred pit bull. It was a mix. And she had to get it out of the house because they didn't allow pit bulls. So I just, And she has mental health issues.
Right.
And
she has, the article indicated that she had post-traumatic stress syndrome. Right.
Right.
So my fast legal opinion in that, non-official legal opinion in that case, you can't exclude an animal solely because of a breed.
I would think so. I mean, I'm not legally anywhere, but I would think that would be kind of ridiculous.
So you have to, So generally, if it's a service animal or an emotional support animal, then it's not considered a pet.
Right.
Right.
Exactly.
And then you have to determine whether or not that particular animal, generally it's a dog, that particular animal itself, that particular one, is a dangerous animal or not.
Right.
And that's, you can't pick breeds.
Right. And, this woman was a little upset, obviously, and rightfully so. And, but I just thought it was kind of ironic that you mentioned it and it was in the paper, I do want to go back a step.
Sure.
How did you get involved in all this? I mean, I got to tell you, I like asking people that because some people have told me, something happened when I was 10 or 12 and I always wanted to be a doctor or I always wanted to be a lawyer or whatever. Others, like me, 4 kids, a house, a mortgage, car payments, got to put food on the table, right, and needed a job. So that's how I wound up with Wonder Bread. Not delivering, by the way. But, it was, that's just my way. I just needed a job and that came about. So I was just curious. I ask people this all the time. How did they get involved in this? And, I'm just interested. It's not that it's,
Yeah, no, so I went to school in the 60s. So
didn't we all?
Yeah. So not too many of us. Increasingly fewer. But anyway.
Yeah,
so
true.
I went to school in the 60s. So you're saving the world was kind of the goal if you went to college in the 60s. So time to graduate. It seemed like law school was the next step to graduating, to doing the job, going through law school. I never wanted a a big-time firm job. It was, I wanted a job that actually worked with people and again, changed the world, which apparently you can't do all at once. So I started legal services in Union County, one of the poverty programs, Union County Legal Services Program. During law school, I started volunteering there during law school, and when I graduated, I said, I'm not leaving until you give me a job. so I worked there for a while, and I thought, I'm doing a lot of 20 divorces a day, 20 landlord-tenant cases a day. And I said, I got to start figuring out if there's something I can really specialize in and gain some knowledge about. And I thought at the time it was going to be elder law because, again, that was a booming interest at the time it's a beginning to develop as a legal field. And then I got a call from the people up at the Community Health Law Project in Essex County. And they said, we're opening up an office, or we're setting up an office in Essex County, a couple other counties, and we'd like you to come and be the managing attorney of our Essex County office. And I said, well, I've only been practicing for 4 years. I'm not sure I'm ready to manage anybody. But a couple of conversations later, I took the job, wasn't ready to manage anybody. But the office itself provided, so it was a relatively new office that was started in the late 60s, with the guidance from Ann Klein, who was the commissioner of Department of what was then Institutions and Agencies.
Right.
And so it was state-funded legal services program for people with severe mental illness, severe and persistent mental illness, who had been in state hospitals. So it was, in essence, a legal services program for people who had been discharged from state hospitals. So all the clients were people with mental illness who are now living in the community, and I did that for 11 years. Then I got another telephone call and then moved to this particular job, but where I started working with more disabilities.
Right.
So solely people with mental illness for 11 solid years.
Yeah. It's true. You know, we've been fortunate. Like I told you, my son and you know, people say, oh, Trenton Psych, you know, ooh, what a terrible, you know. He had the best experience there. I don't know whether it was because I worked odd hours and could go, like, any time, and they never knew when I was coming. My wife would go, like, in the evening, and we'd both go on the weekends. And there's people there that had nobody come, you know. So I don't know whether that had something to do with it, but the staff was wonderful, and, you know, we were very fortunate, I think, you know.
Yeah, so that would be one of the things that we would encourage, again, that the more open an institution is, the more likelihood that things will go better than if it's a closed situation.
Right. Getting back to the disabilities, is one harder to help than the other? Like, is physical versus mental or, you know, vice versa, is it harder? Yeah.
So that's a thing that we talk about with some frequency. So when I worked only with people with mental illness, and then I came down to Trenton and started working with people at the time exclusively with developmental disabilities, intellectual impairments. So the people I left who were dealing with people with mental illness said, I don't understand how you could possibly provide legal services to people with developmental disabilities. The people that I ran into, who I started working with, who were working with people with developmental disabilities, said, I don't understand how you could provide legal services to people with mental illness. So, no, it's the same. I mean, basically, basically what you have to do is listen to your client and try to find out, try to discern from them what their goals are, and then work towards the goal. So it requires listening, and listening to people with mental illness and listening to people with intellectual disabilities is a basic skill, the same skill, but it requires different techniques. You just have to, some requires some patience, some requires, listening to what people are saying. Some people without communication skills, you have to judge, you have to use other observational skills that yours about how things are going. So ultimately, if you want to be a good attorney or a good social worker or a good anything, your goal is to listen to people,
right?
And then respond to their wishes as best you can, right?
Now, when someone doesn't need legal help, say, and you have a separate staff for that, what do they do then?
So generally when a case comes into the office, some things would jump right to the lawyers, because some things are, if somebody comes in, you can't have a non-lawyer try to help do the case. If you have, for instance, somebody who is, if we have an instance where somebody is in the psych hospital and there's a problem developing in a psych hospital, then our non-legal staff will go out.
Right.
But if that develops into a situation where we can't encourage the people to change the situation, and we do think that they have an argument, then we may then the non-attorney and the attorneys will work together to try to resolve the situation.
Okay. Let's see. I'd like to go over some of the goals and priorities.
Sure.
So I'd like to start with abuse and neglect.
Right.
Would you elaborate a little bit on that?
Yeah, so the abuse and neglect is the basic reason for starting the disability, the protection advocacy system in the first place. And so the location of so we go into the state-operated psychiatric hospitals and the state-operated developmental centers on a regular basis. So staff are scheduled to be there on a regular basis.
Right.
And so we will have clients there, but we'll also walk around the wards, see what is interesting, you know, listen to people who may be there, check out things that we may have heard about in between. So basically we're walking around the wards and trying to ensure that the conditions within the facilities are appropriate for the mm-hmm. individuals. Mm-hmm. That people aren't being over-medicated or under-medicated. There are not a lot of assaults, things like that. So that's one location. But also we're getting involved in abuse and neglect in the community-based programs. So if there's a situation now where people are out of the hospital, living in residential programs that are paid for, contracted for by the state, and the services are not being delivered appropriately, or there is a problem with somebody being kicked out of the service, then that's something we will also look at in the abuse and neglect thing. And then we will also we also get a report when people are who are clients of the state, either DD, developmental disabilities, or mental health, who die. And then we will take a look to make mm-hmm. sure that whatever happened there was, if it was preventable, what happened.
Right. It's, you know, there's a lot of discrimination, unfortunately, not only with mental illness, but with disabilities right. and all sorts of disabilities, as you well aware. Right. And I find it just so aggravating, for lack of a better word, that people didn't ask for this. You know, my son didn't say, hey, give me schizophrenia, I want it, you know. And people who have mental disabilities or physical disabilities or whatever, they didn't ask for it. They didn't ask to lose a limb or an arm because of an illness or whatever that couldn't be saved. Right. It's just sad that people don't treat them like people.
Right.
And when I teach some of the classes that we teach, the family to family and so on and so forth, I keep reminding the people who've taken the class that the person that they're caring for or in the class for because they have an illness, there's a person under that nickname or, you know, mantra that they have. And that person is probably the same person that was born and, you know, blah, blah, that you cradled as a baby and a whole nine yards. And like I said, they didn't ask for it.
Right.
And it's unfortunate that there's so much discrimination, and not only in New Jersey, I mean all over.
Right.
We have a lot more services than some of the other states, and we do a lot more good in Jersey, not only NAMI, but all over, like yourself and a lot of organizations, than other states. And it's surprising, you know, because I've had reason to reach out to other states over the course of the years and find out that they don't have this, they don't do this, you know, and it's like, wow, really? But anyway, one of the big discriminations is housing.
Mm-hmm.
Let's start with that. There's others that I have here, but let's start with housing. What do you find is the biggest discrimination in housing?
Yeah, so for the most part these days we're not getting, so a lot of the people with disabilities have to rely on subsidized housing, right?
Right.
So there isn't this, we don't get a lot of calls because people are in the private housing market and can't get rentals because they can't afford it in most cases. So for good or ill, because at least with subsidized housing, if you have a voucher, they're going to find you a place to live.
Right, Section 8 are you talking about?
Right. Not having a rent subsidy is going to leave you with some difficulty. So there isn't so much problem with landlords refusing to rent to individuals with disabilities. But there are some things about accommodating once you've rented. So we've already talked about the service animals and
right.
the emotional support animals. So that's sometimes a problem. Sometimes a person with physical disabilities may need to alter the apartment, modify it, get a ramp to get in the
mm-hmm.
front door,
mm-hmm.
various things like that. Sometimes that's a dispute that we try to deal with. And with the population getting increasingly older, there's this big fight for the accessible parking space. If you're living in a condo or a large apartment building and you have a disability that doesn't allow you to walk very far, you're going to want the parking space as close to the front door as you can. And a lot of places have all kinds of rules to prevent that from happening
right.
or to give you a hard
right.
time. So those are the kinds of main housing complaints that we're getting these days.
I would think that landlords, or at least my limited experience, landlords are more acceptable to Section 8 housing because that's guaranteed, and, you know, than they are to people without Section 8 housing.
Right. So that's the incentive for Section 8, right? That you know you're going to get something, that the state has actually set up a whole new system where you're going to get the check from the state.
Right. Right.
In fact, it's going to be direct deposited into your bank account.
Mm-hmm.
The moment it's due. The drawback to that is that the state has rent limits that may, in some locations in New Jersey, not be totally realistic based on the rental market otherwise.
Right.
Because New Jersey is one of the most expensive places to have housing.
Oh, yeah.
Right. And
I keep wondering why I'm doing here, especially in Hunterdon County. They tell you it's one of the richest in the country, and I go, what the heck am I doing here? You know?
That's right. And then so HUD determines what the fair market value in the counties are, and sometimes that makes it a little difficult to find some rental opportunities.
Right. It's but if the person is on SSI, or
right,
then they can, if it's $100 or $200 difference, they can, you know, 9 times out of 10 do it to some degree,
right,
you know, if they have a job or something on the side. Which brings me to the next one, employment.
Yeah, so employment is a really difficult barrier for people with disabilities. So despite the fact that the Americans with Disabilities Act was passed in 92, and New Jersey has an employment discrimination, you haven't been able to discriminate against people with disabilities in employment in New Jersey since the 70s.
Right, right.
Jersey was very early in the ballgame in doing that. The percentage of people with disabilities in the workplace has not increased. So it's always it's hovering always around 25 to 30% of people with disabilities are in the workplace, and 80 to 75% of the people with disabilities are not in the job market, and that really has not changed very much. So cracking the job, so during the Great Recession, that was going to be a problem for everybody. As the employment improves, so people with disabilities are kind of stuck with the same thing everybody else does. So in full-time employment's rather scarce, you know, part-time job rigging kind of thing is stuff that you want to try to do, but it's still difficult for people with disabilities to break into the job market at all.
Right.
And then once they're in the job, then you do have a whole set of discussion about what kind of accommodations an individual may need. So if you're trying to accommodate somebody with a mental illness, you may have to do things like restructure where the person works, restructure the times that individuals come into work, allow people to take breaks when they need to take breaks. And sometimes that's, you know, difficult for employers, depending on size and what's going on, to accommodate some of that sometimes. So sometimes you run into an employer that says, we don't have to accommodate anybody. That requires a little education. And then sometimes there's a discussion about, should be a discussion between the employer and the employee about what is reasonable for both of them.
Right, right. And I know in Hunterdon County and surrounding county, Mr. Carrillo, who owns ShopRite, is very open to hiring people with disabilities and such, and because he has, I don't know, 3, 4, 5 stores, and he hires people, which I think is awesome, you know, because he has been very, very good to hiring people. He's been very good in fundraising for various organizations and providing food and stuff, have you. So, you know, he's very, very good that way.
Yes.
What about government services? Is there...
Yeah, so government services involves a variety of different things. So when we talk about discrimination in government services, one of the things we can talk about is keeping people in institutions when they don't need to be there. So that was a famous decision in the 1999. That if a government is running a program and providing services for individuals, they can't keep people with disabilities unnecessarily segregated in a place where they don't no longer need to be. So that's one particular instance. Another instance is if the community is running, say, a recreational program, then they should be also ensuring that kids with disabilities are participating in either that recreational program, which we would obviously like, inclusive recreational program, or at least a parallel program that gives them equal opportunity to participate. Most of the playgrounds you see these days are handicap accessible for people with disabilities, right? A real effort to use materials that are where people, the kids in that use wheelchairs can access the programs as well as the children who are currently not using wheelchairs. So that's another indication. Again, access to so we're talking about housing. So if a housing program, a housing authority says, all right, we're going to open up our waiting list on Tuesday between 2 and 3 in the afternoon, and you have to physically get here to fill out an application, that's a problem.
Yeah, exactly.
Right, because you're not providing full access to everybody, people with disabilities, to make sure they can access that program. So those are the kinds of things that we're dealing with with accessing programs. And the courts are actually kind of in that category, too. That's how the case started. Hunterdon County, I'm certain, is a very historic courthouse that probably the person with a wheelchair is going to have difficult getting into unless they've recently fixed up an entrance. So accessing courts is very important. So being able to get inside the court, people that are a lot of activists with disabilities who want to attend meetings of the town governing body that can't get into the building because of the arrangement of steps, those are all things. Another way of looking at government access services.
Right. Another priority is accessible transportation. I understand Hunterdon County and Flemington and Clinton, et cetera, and surrounding areas are not New York City or Philadelphia. And they do have, some limited transportation. It's better than nothing. And they do have handicap accessible means of transportation, but it just not as much as it should be, I don't think, having my son use it. So,
So accessible transportation in New Jersey is a real difficult nut to crack, particularly on the western end of the state, right? So we're talking essentially about paratransit. So we do have where New Jersey Transit is the main provider of transportation. Mm-hmm. They have an obligation to provide paratransit service along their routes. Now, they don't have to go out of their way and take you to someplace they would not ordinarily go, but they do have a requirement, and they have the Access Link services, which is a follow-along traffic route. So they have that kind of obligation. And occasionally there will be some people who believe that they're eligible for follow-along services, which basically means that they live within a reasonable distance from the normal traffic lane and can't get to the normal traffic pickup stop. And sometimes there's a dispute as to whether or not that's true and whether or not you should have to cross a five-lane highway to get to the accessible part of the accessible stop or not. So that's one thing. The paratransit itself, which is basically the county's responsibility, that's a whole other situation because mainly that's coming from county money.
Okay.
And there's not much input. Some input from the casino funds, but who knows where that's going these days. So that's difficult. So county paratransit services, the availability and the rules vary very much from county to county. So some counties, if you live in some counties in New Jersey and need to go to the next door county to go to the doctor, you basically have to go into New York City and then take another set of transportation out because some paratransit doesn't cross state lines, county lines.
County lines, yeah.
Yeah, so part of that is very little for us to do with. It's a resource issue. It's one that you have to lobby your government to try to do more about. We work in concert with things like the Developmental Disabilities Council, who is currently funding a project to try to educate legislators about the difficulties of transportation in New Jersey and the problems that people with disabilities have getting to work and services and things like that. So, yeah, it's difficult. But, again, if there's a county that's causing problems that does it says that somebody cannot participate in their paratransit program or they're just absolutely cannot, the person just set up so the person just can't use it, then that's something that we will also try to get involved in.
Okay. Do you help clients get the proper health care?
Yeah, so that's an increase. So that business of ours is tripled. So if we would have invested in insurance companies doing bad things, we would have made a lot of money. So when the state transferred its managed long-term services and support to managed care, managed long-term services and sports, So people who either are going into nursing homes or can survive in the community without going into nursing homes but
right.
need services and supports, that was moved over to managed care companies. And since that has moved over to managed care companies, we found that a lot of people are getting notices from the managed care companies that the amount of hours that they get of in-home support is going to be decreased. Sometimes the amount of hours, sometimes services are going to be decreased altogether, terminated altogether, that they won't get any more services. So that has basically kept us busy. So we've gone from basically trying to do 30 cases a year of arguing with insurance companies about whether something is reimbursable or somebody should have access to over 300 cases a year.
Wow.
Of dealing with arguments with insurance companies, both managed care services, but private carriers, and also Medicaid and Medicare.
Yeah, it's a lot of work.
Yeah, so and the interesting thing is it's amazing how different it may be. So as I said, the main thing is people who are getting in-home health care services, right, so they continue to live in their house. But there are also surprisingly number of cases, particularly with people with mental illness, who go to a dentist. The dentist says you need this dental services. And you know people with mental illness, there is a problem with maintaining dental hygiene.
Right.
And so there's a lot. And some people, for some reason, at some point, institutions were just pulling out teeth. So it's a real concern with that particular population. And so there are a number of denials of dental services, which we have to go back in on. And then
right.
there was recent discussion about the medication, which is advertised on TV, but then when you try to get it from your insurance provider, it's not on their formulary, so you're not going to get that particular kind of service. So there are a variety of different kinds of disputes, and a new one pops up every day that you wouldn't expect.
Yeah, it's just amazing to me, you know, it really is. You know, I know from our personal experience that people sometimes with either mental or physical disabilities or both, they have trouble sometimes making proper decisions, or at least correct decisions. Maybe not so much proper is not a good word, but a correct decision. How do you help them with that?
So let's start with the easy one, which is the Advanced Directive for Mental Health Care. So, all right, so if somebody has been in the mental health system, there's a good chance that they're going to be in the mental health system again, rightly or wrongly. They'll be referred to that system. So if you want to really plan out and prepare for, it's not always a mental health crisis, but at least it's an involvement with the mental health system again. We like to talk to people about advanced directives. So an advanced directive for psychiatric care or mental health care would involve, in the event I have a psychiatric crisis or I need psychiatric services, this is what I would like to happen. This is my preference. This is the place I would like to go. And this is who I would like to be involved in my treatment planning. So it's the opportunity to say in advance that the individual does or doesn't want their family member involved or which family members
right.
they do want involved. And how much information can be shared with the family member. One of the biggest trials that we have, again, across the country, is the people's misunderstanding of the HIPAA privacy rule, that it's constantly being used as an excuse not to share information, not to tell people where their loved ones may be. Somebody calls up a hospital and asks if my son or daughter there, and the hospital says, we can't tell you. That's just not necessarily true, all right? So there's a great misunderstanding about what HIPAA requires and what it doesn't require. It does permit a lot more sharing of information. So if you know that's a problem, one of the things that you can do, again, is a little advanced planning and talk to somebody about just doing up a short piece of paper which says if ever I'm involved or need medical service or mental health services, please communicate and talk with, this relative or that
right,
relative or
right.
things like that. And that should stop that kind of nonsense from going on. So planning ahead is one of the things that we try to do. And we've worked now with the community collaborative support programs
mm-hmm.
on providing education to people with who have a history or use mental health services about the benefits of psychiatric advance directives. Own choice whether or not to use them, whether you think it may be a good idea or not. But and again, it doesn't have to be a whole thing. But it can be, here's parts that you want to take care of. So that's one thing. The other thing that we get involved in is, so we do not represent anybody who wants to become a guardian of anybody, right?
Okay.
We will generally get involved when there's somebody who has a guardian that doesn't think they need that level of guardianship services anymore. So it may be either to remove the guardian or allow the person with a disability to share more decision-making with the guardian. In New Jersey, you're supposed, if you are a guardian in New Jersey, you are supposed to involve the person that you have the decision-making responsibility for in the decision-making,
mm-hmm.
In the hopes, again, that they learn how to make decisions and do the decision-making process. These days, we're also really promoting, along with our national organization, this idea of supported decision-making to, again, allow the person with the disability to make more of the decisions, but to guide them in the decision, the choices that they have through a process called the supported decision-making. And then the other thing we got involved in is that if an individual has a guardian appointed by the state through the Bureau of Guardianship Services and they're at the end of life, then a state guardian cannot consent to terminating life-supporting, life-sustaining treatment without an ethics consultation and our involvement to make sure that this is the right time to make that kind of decision and person's not whose life is not prematurely terminated.
And they pretty much understand what they're doing.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that helps.
Yeah,
you know.
So the guardianship services are pretty good. Every once in a while we run into hospitals and other places that are a little bit not sure what they're doing. But we have a pretty good relationship with the Bureau at the moment.
What are some of the disabilities rights goals for children?
Yeah, so the probably the biggest request we have for services is special education services.
Mm.
Children with disabilities who are in schools who need to who need educational services and whose family members believe they're not getting the appropriate level of services. And this goes the entire gamut from, again, to just your basic learning disabilities problem where people are generally that's fixable by most districts, but some districts will say, well, we can't find a teaching specialist this year, so we're not going to provide the service. Some districts even say we're not providing special ed this year because we don't have the money. So those kinds of things you try to jump on right away.
Right.
But one of the things that we're also trying to advocate is allowing kids with disabilities to participate in the regular school program to the extent possible. And you alluded to one of the reasons for this before. One of the reasons for discrimination is that people just don't grow up with people with disabilities. They don't grow up with other kids in their classes and stuff, if you don't grow up with other kids in your classes with disabilities.
Right.
So when you become an adult, these are strangers to you. They're the people that you don't know or don't understand. So the more often kids with and without disabilities can do things together, particularly in classrooms and school mm-hmm. activities, sports and recreation, that kind of stuff, the more everybody benefits.
It's right.
a much greater knowledge across the thing. Again, now one of the problems we have in New Jersey is the school funding formula and a variety of other things like that. So, and some districts it can be expensive to provide really good services to some children with disabilities, particularly if you have kids with autism. That require a little bit more segregated or specialized kind of services. Then it can be expensive. And so for some school districts, it's easier to throw all the kids with a disability in a classroom and hope something happens as opposed to actually design an individual plan for each particular kid.
Right.
So then you run into the parent who's tried to keep their kid in the local school district. It hasn't worked. And now they said, I can't deal with this anymore. You got to get me someplace where my kid can actually learn something. And that's all those kinds of things pop up on a daily basis, and it's very frustrating to deal with.
Do you have a large percentage of your clients as children?
Yeah,
when I say children, I mean like under 18?
Yeah, it's 21 for
21,
education. Yeah,
right.
21 for education services. So I would say I think we're probably running about 30% of our requests for services these days is children. So special education is the one thing. And then trying to coordinate special education services with other children's services, as the Department of Children and Family,
right.
which also provides some services, particularly mental health services for kids, in-home mental health services for kids. So they seem to have that down relatively well, and it seems to have a very good dot with kids. But then if you have kids with autism or intellectual disabilities, and they also need services, you can't fit them into the same mold that you fit kids with mental illness into, right? Severe emotional disturbance into. So getting them to be flexible in their programs is sometimes difficult. And when you're trying to deal with getting services for multiple different programs, that's also not too easy.
Right, right. It's got to be difficult, you know.
It requires a lot of coordination because particularly in schools will say, well, go there to get that. Or somebody else say, you know, go someplace right. else to get that. When, no, it's got to really be a coordinated kind of
exactly.
effort.
And I know that another big issue is finding jobs.
Yes.
How do you approach this?
So our employment goal, basically, we deal with the Division of – we are the ombudsman for the Division of Vocational Rehabilitation Services. So if people that go to Division of Vocational Rehabilitation Services or the Commission for the Blind and Visually Impaired for vocational services and have a problem with those agencies are supposed to be referred for us to us to help them – you know, intercede and work right. on behalf of those particular programs. So that employment goal is basically to make sure that people with disabilities get, who want to go back to work, get the services they need to be able to go back to work. And that can include anything from, a chair that they can sit in at work that mm-hmm. their disability is comfortable for them, to college education that they may need to meet their educational goal.
Do they have like a coach who checks up on them once in a while, or
yeah, so that's one of the services that is job coaching is a service that is available.
Okay,
but again, so again, you may have somebody with mental illness or developmental disability who may need a job coach or may need reminders. A person with, for example, a traumatic brain injury, who may have a very difficult short term memory, may need prompts and reminders about what the next part of their job is. So that may involve assistive technology, or it may involve a whole lot of Post-it notes all over the mm-hmm. office, or whatever
right,
is required to do.
Right.
So then a job coach can come in and do that. But there are other people who don't need the on-the-job assistance. They need the assistance to get there.
Right.
All right? So, for example, we were dealing recently with a woman who is deaf, who wanted to become a hairdresser. And so she was actually in cosmetology school. And the division said, well, people who are deaf can't be cosmetologists. Well, there's absolutely no reason why someone who's deaf can't be
why?
A cosmetologist,
yeah.
right? Well, because you can't hear the client tell you what they want. But that's not an
client
impediment.
Client can write it down.
Right. it's not an impediment. There are ways around that. So, right. So that's – we went – so she's not going to require assistance when she's on the job. She required assistance to help go to cosmetology school.
Right.
And, in fact, if you're on if you're receiving SSI or Social Security disability, then the Vocational Rehabilitation Services is supposed to pick up most of the cost of your training mm-hmm. for those particular programs because the federal government is as interested in getting you off Social Security benefits as you are. So there's an investment in getting those individuals receiving services into a job.
Oh. Is there anything I missed that you'd like to bring up?
Yeah, so the only other thing that we did, so I just
there
mentioned
you go.
Real fast assistive technology, right? So we're only one of two protection advocacy programs in the country that also have an assistive technology program. So part of our job is to go around the state and try to educate people about what devices are available to people with disabilities to allow them to participate in school or on the job, the same as people without disabilities. So I mentioned the person with disabilities may use an iPad or a reminder
right,
system
right.
about things to do. People with mental illness may use the same kind of simple reminder system about when to take medication, jock notes and stuff like that. But it also goes to housing modifications, vehicular ramps, and all kinds of even up to the point of assisting people who need – try to figure out who have very little fine motor control, who want to access a computer mm-hmm. – what kind of interface devices they can use so that they'll be able to join the computer world with the rest
right,
of us, which is
right.
almost an essential in today's world.
Yeah. It's ironic because I saw on, I forget where it was, a couple of weeks ago, a young man who lost both his arms from the shoulder, and he was using a computer using his toes.
Right.
And it's like, I'm thinking to myself, I type one finger at a time, and this young man is typing like crazy with his toes. I thought, what an awesome, you know.
I had a client that also communicated using his, the toe was the only thing that he basically had control over, right?
Wow. But it's just, you know, amazing that people like that, the strength they have, that, right. You know, and the determination that, you know, this is not going to beat me, I'm going to do this, you know, that sort of thing. It's just awesome.
Right, and it also begs the question about, so if you have somebody with a disability, you shouldn't start off with that, what they can't do. Because
right.
There are ways to figure out things that they can do and move in that direction.
Right. Would you like to give the website and phone number?
Yeah, so it's fairly easy. It's Disability Rights New Jersey. So our website is www.drnj.org. The email address for all our communication, if you want to communicate with the agency, is advocate@drnj.org. And then our toll-free phone number is 1-800-922-7233.
Okay. Why don't you give the phone number again?
Right. Our toll-free phone number is 1-800-922-7233.
And just the website?
Yeah, DRNJ, Disability Rights New Jersey, DRNJ.org.
Oh, okay. And like I said, if there's anything somebody wanted to reach out to you, you know, they could do it on,
They can do that. Call a phone, send an email. And again, so we're available also to go out and do training, education programs. Elections coming up. We do voting rights education for individuals. People who are veterans, we have special information for people who are veterans, particularly susceptible these days to head injuries. And it's not necessarily what you would think of with, you know, being next to explosions or
right.
wounds or stuff like that. It's just bouncing up and down in those vehicles all day, knocking your brain against the helmet and the,
right.
and the top of the SUV that you're driving in. So, again, so any kind of education program, question about even what we do or question about issues about people with disabilities, how the new transition to fee-for-service is going to work with and what we're doing to make sure people continue to get services, all those things were available to come out to anybody who wants to talk to and ask us to come and speak to their group.
Well, I can't thank you enough, Joe, for coming. It's, you know, to me, it's just, like I said, I'd never heard of it. And, you know, I thought I knew all the services that were available to people with disabilities and mental health issues, and I guess I didn't. But I'm so glad that you came because I think it's very informative, and I think it's a wonderful thing you guys are doing. And, you know, you're helping people who need help.
Right.
And, you know, and to get on with their lives. And that's awesome, in my opinion.
Great. Thank you very much, and thank you for having me.
Oh, okay. And one more time, the phone number.
Sure,
1-800-922-7233. 1-800-922-7233. Okay. All right, folks. We'll see you again next week. And remember, mental health really does matter. And Joe, thank you for coming.
Thank you.
Did you know that 1 in 5 people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers, and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call NAMI Hunterdon at 908-284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. NAMI Hunterdon, the voice for mental health in Hunterdon County.
When it matters most, our award-winning team of emergency physicians and nurses provides sophisticated care 24 hours a day. Superior emergency care at a moment's notice. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care.
Hey, Pat. know between the two of us, we know how to screw in a light bulb?
Come on, Steve. We can do better than that. Well, at least I can. Tell you what, you sit there and look pretty, and I'll fix it.
Listen to you, big guy. Better yet, let's get everyone to listen to Home Sweet Home with me, Steve Bailey, Inspector with Brass Tack Home Inspections.
And I'm Pat Gregory, Handyman Extraordinaire with Taskman Home Improvements, every Friday at 11 a.m. Or you can go to